important one, so he gave her as much of the real man as he could. Every second in her company was sheer paradise. He'd taken her one night to a Russian Orthodox church where a friend of his was visiting. He'd married her, using his real name, Victor Prikensky, not the one she knew him as. He had deliberately given her a glimpse of the paperwork, although it was in Russian, but his name was there. He had put his mark on her, the one Prikensky men had been branding their women with for centuries. Her name was branded on him, his chest, right over his heart. He had insisted they both get tattoos. She'd been reluctant. His little innocent. He had loved corrupting her, teaching her wicked, sinful things, watching her eyes go wide with shock as her body came apart for him. He thought of her night and day, dreamed of her when he wasn't having nightmares. She gave him respite from the horrors of his memories. He touched his chest, the spot right over his heart where he'd tattooed the lock. She had the key, and she always would. When we join you in a few days, Tsar, keep a low profile. You always do, but I don't want him noticing you. Right now he thinks he's funny sending my enforcer on a shit detail. Finding us a camp, following Jackson for a few days to get his routine. We could send a prospect for that. He's jacking with me. Victor shrugged. It won't matter. He's showing he has no respect for me, or for you. You can't take things personally, Habit. If he's as loony as you say he is, you just get through it. Hope he goes back to whatever hole he crawled out of fast and get back to business. Grinning, Habit clapped him on the back. You always put things in perspective. I've never seen you shaken up. Not ever. We've got some business we have to do right now, right here. The chapter that just got hit has product coming in and no one to receive it, guard it, or get it moving along the pipeline. They've asked for our help. That's your specialty, so you pick your brothers and get it done. You'll have to get the details from Speed. Victor shook his head. What are you doing, man? We can't run product here. This territory is taken by another club. We're riding naked, without our colors, in order to get to Sea Haven without war with them. And we wouldn't win. They're strong here. We're not. Even with two chapters on the move, we don't have enough manpower to win in a fight. Habit nodded. I know that. Their club is nearly as strong as ours is. Or stronger. They were the first international club. You don't want to fuck with them or disrespect them. War isn't fun. We're already losing too many members to whoever is after our whore business. It's not my call. Their chapter president had some product coming in through this route, and his men were going to make certain it made its way out back east. I don't know why they're using this route or how often they do it, but they have men down, and they've asked for help. Victor knew that tone. Habit lived by their laws. You helped your brothers. You didn't turn your back on them, no matter how nasty or dangerous the job. Victor respected that. He lived by the same code. But his loyalty and his brothers were those members of Torpedo Inc., not the Swords. He cursed silently, even as he kept his features expressionless. He had no choice. If he was going to cut off the head of the snake, bring down the man responsible for the biggest human trafficking ring in the world, then he was going to have to see this through. And so were his men. They detested drugs nearly as much as they did pedophiles, and with good reason. He couldn't save the world, and he couldn't stop the rage burning inside his brothers any more than he could stop it in his own belly. It was always there, coloring their lives, keeping them apart from every other human being. Reaper was right. Victor hated that he was right. He wanted to fit into normal like his birth brothers had. They lived with their women on a huge farm in Sea Haven. He supposed it was all relative. Their normal probably wasn't exactly the normal others lived in their homes. Behind their fences, comfortable in their jobs and with their neighbors. Tsar? I'll get their product through, Habit. Habit grinned at him again. But this time it was strained. He didn't want to lose his number one enforcer. Victor had brought too much to the table. He was efficient at killing. When he did a job, it got done, and fast. More and more over the last 5 years, Habit had relied heavily on him. In addition, Victor had brought in the others, men he'd called friends. He'd vouched for them, and they'd turned out to be equally as lethal and every bit as ruthless and reliable as the man Habit knew as Czar. If their loyalty leaned a little toward Victor, Habit overlooked it, or didn't see it. Victor found that Habit saw what he wanted to see. Habit, now that he thought they were in sync, grabbed a handful of peanuts out of the can sitting on the table. "You leaving first thing in the morning for the coast?" "Yeah, I figure it will take a few days to find us a good camp and to scout out DeVoe. If Evan is really going to make an appearance, I'll want to be able to ensure his safety. We have to get in and get out before the other club knows we're in the area." Habit nodded. "That makes sense. And Evan isn't going to ride with us." There was a sneer in his voice. "He's too good for that now. He'll come in a helicopter or a private plane." That was good. He'd have to use the Little River Airport if he didn't want a 3-hour drive from one of the main airports, San Francisco or Oakland. It might not be a bad place to hit him. Victor tucked that thought away. For now, he had to meet whoever was bringing product into another club's territory. Product or not, it was so damn disrespectful he could barely tolerate the thought. If a man lived free by a certain code, he kept to the code as much as possible. Even undercover, he was part of a brotherhood, and you just didn't screw with that. Victor gave his famous casual shrug. "It doesn't much matter. He'll wear the colors when he makes the kill, and we'll watch his back. He'll leave, and we can all go home. Just another couple of weeks, Habit, and you'll see your old lady." Now he knew why Habit hadn't brought his woman with him. Of course, he hadn't said anything to Victor about Elena or Ice about Lana. Now they'd have to worry again about the two women. Lana could be left with the rest of the boys. She was a little spitfire. They affectionately called her Widow, not because she was one, but because she made them so frequently. He debated about taking Elena or leaving her behind. She had certain skills that could be useful, and if they all were going to stay alive, they might need them. "Seriously, Czar, I'm sorry about the product thing. I had no idea the other chapter might root something through this territory. We wouldn't have known, probably, ever. But they got hit hard, and there are too many men down." "They shouldn't have tried bringing the women with them." "It was business as usual. Evan made that very clear. He made their entire chapter ride. We only had about half come." And most of those were Victor's Torpedo Inc. brothers. That had worked out nicely. Habit had left the men running their traffic business home. That suited Victor just fine. In fact, he'd counted on it. Habit's chapter had only been hit once, and they hadn't lost as many members. That had been a calculated move on Victor's part. They had to get hit, or it would look suspicious. But they couldn't lose too many men, or Habit would insist that Victor and the others help with the whore business. That was never going to happen. He could stomach only so much for the job. Victor glanced at his watch. "I'll go get the details from Speed and take care of this so we can get moving. My crew will be riding early tomorrow morning." Chapter 3. There was nothing in the world Victor loved more than riding his Harley for hours on the open road. It was the only time he ever felt truly free. For a man like him, caged and shackled most of his life, freedom was everything. The wind in his face, the roar of his bike, his brothers at his back. All of it made life good, worth living. He'd taken this assignment, and in some ways it turned out to be one of the best, and yet the worst he'd ever taken. He'd spent 5 years with men who were mostly scum. In his world, he would have cut them down one by one, and in fact, he was actually doing just that. There were few men he'd met in the Swords Club who were worthwhile. Drugs, gun running, using their own women as prostitutes and drug runners. The worst was human trafficking. It was the club's biggest moneymaker, and no one seemed to object. It wasn't that he hadn't done his share of fucked up illegal things, but a man had to have a code to live by. The Swords' only code was to wreak as much havoc in the world as possible. Sometimes, when he put on their colors, he felt filthy, covered in shit. He wanted this over so he could wear his own colors with pride. He'd be truly free when that happened. At least after 5 very long years, he could see the end coming. He lifted his face to feel the full onslaught of the wind. The sensation made him feel clean when he wasn't. He didn't have the right to judge, not when he'd killed more people than probably the entire Swords Club put together. Not him alone, of course. He glanced to his left, and Reaper was there. To his right was Savage. Ice, Storm, Mechanic, Transporter, and Absinthe rode at his back. Elena had her arms wrapped tightly around him. Twice she'd thrown her arms in the air for sheer joy. The action had made him smile. For the first time in years, they were close to finishing their task. They would be able to strip off the stench of the swords and wear their own colors. Once they were back in them, none of his brothers would ever take them off again. They were done with being someone's puppets. Word had gotten to them that their greatest enemy was dead, taken down by Victor's brother Casimir and his woman. Victor honestly didn't know how to think about the death of Yuri Sorbakov and his father, Kostya. The men deserved death 10 times over, but he'd been dancing to their tune for so long, he almost didn't know how to exist without them threatening his family to force him to carry out the dirtiest, most dangerous jobs they had. Like this one. He could walk away clean right now if he wanted, start his life free with his brothers, wear his own colors, go to his wife without fear she'd be killed. But if he did that, he'd be letting the lowest scum of the earth crawl away free as well. That was against his code. For now, riding for hours in the sun with the wind on his face and his brothers at his back, he felt alive again. He knew the others were feeling it too. They might not be wearing their colors, but they had the ink on their backs, and it felt as if they were living life free, if only for a short period of time. They'd been traveling along Highway 1 for a few hours now. The ocean was mellow, looking like blue-green glass shining on the surface. The farther north they went, the darker the water, as if something lurked beneath the surface, ready to erupt at any time. He liked that. It made him feel he belonged. The air was perfect. So far, they hadn't run into a single cop, at least not one that paid attention to them. He was eager to see his birth brothers, to meet their women, see their homes. It had been a long time coming, a long, hard road. But now that it was nearing the end, it was all worth it, knowing they were alive and safe. They'd gotten out alive, intact, able to have normal relationships. His Torpedo Ink brothers knew all about his younger birth brothers. He knew they would protect them and their families, just as he would. And then there was Blythe. He let his mind turn to his woman. 5 years was a long time for any woman to be alone, let alone one like Blythe. She was beautiful and nurturing, the kind of woman who would make a good mother, or a dynamite old lady. She'd look out for the members of his club, take them under her wing, and help them find a way to live. He knew their club would continue doing what they did best, and it wasn't legal. It would never be legal. Others would view it as taking the law into their own hands. Before, they'd been sanctioned by their government, weapons let loose on enemies of the state, or criminals impossible to bring to justice any other way. Now, they would continue on their own. They were good at hunting criminals, the kind the law couldn't get to. They used the kind of force the law couldn't use. It was in their blood. He thought long and hard over the it. Killing. fighting, life and death. It was how they lived, and they knew no other way. Blythe had to understand how important this assignment was. She couldn't view it that she wasn't every bit as important to him. She was more. He'd just have to make her understand that she was his life, his hope, his reason for getting up in the morning. This was something he did because he had to do it. He had no choice. There was something in him that just couldn't allow Evan and his club to ruin the lives of so many young boys and girls. Girls like Darby Hennessy. Again, he put it in the back of his mind to check on her, to make certain she had a home and a family watching out for her. Elena's hands gripped his shirt tight and twisted. That was her signal that they needed to stop. She never admitted she had to pee. She didn't ask. They'd developed a system after he found her in tears. The rage burning in his belly, always so close, flared into a hot, bright ball of burning knots. She wasn't the only one. They'd managed to live through their past, but it left a lot of scars, some of them uglier than others. He raised his hand, fist closed, giving the signal that they'd stop at the first available place. Granted, there weren't too many on this road, at least not close together. What there was were parks, several of them. All of them had restrooms, most nothing more than upgraded outhouses, but they worked. After their beginning, outhouses were fashionable. Elena nuzzled his back and he patted her hand. She was gorgeous, sweet, strangely vulnerable, and yet lethal as hell. He thought of her as Torch rather than Elena. They all did. Earlier on, they'd established names for themselves. He was 10, and he'd come up with the idea to give the others things to think about. What kinds of talents they might have, what each thought of the other. It was a way to pass the time and to bond closely with one another when they were locked down in the dark dungeon. The school had a dungeon, a real one, where they were often taken to be tortured for some mythical infraction, but the confinement area was without windows and always kept dark. Mostly, they were kept down there without clothes, treated like animals. He gathered the youngest close and told stories and made up games. Eventually, the other boys just under his age helped him to distract the younger ones. Over the years, as children died, the instructors brought in younger and younger ones. Being toddlers didn't prevent the instructors from using them for their own evil purposes. He spotted a sign ahead, another park, this one larger than some. He signaled and they all turned on to the winding drive. A small wooden hut separated those driving in from those driving out. A park ranger stuck her head out of the booth, eyeing them warily. Victor didn't bother to smile. It never helped.
"We're here just for an hour or two."
He pulled out the money for all 8 of them, even though he considered making her take money from all the others. If she thought he looked intimidating, she should get a good look at Reaper and Savage. She handed him a map and told him where the bathrooms were before waving him through with the stickers to put on their bikes. Like that would happen. He shoved them in his jacket and glanced back. The ranger had stepped out of her booth and was looking after them as if they disgusted her.
"I hate that," Elena said as she slipped off the bike so he could park it right in front of the bathrooms.
"What?"
But he knew.
"The way she looked at me, at us."
"Fuck her, Elena," he snapped.
He caught her chin.
"She isn't better than us."
But he knew that wasn't true. The woman looked down on them for riding motorcycles, for their tattoos, guessing at their lifestyle. But they were killers, every single one of them. Learning to kill had shaped their lives from young ages. There was no getting around that, and maybe, because it was stamped into their bones, it was there in their faces for everyone to see. Bringing them all home to Blythe maybe wasn't such a good idea after all. If she looked at them the same way, with such distaste and disdain, he didn't know what he'd do. Then again, his woman would never do that. Never.
It wouldn't happen. Blythe was the best the world had to offer. He didn't understand why fate had given her to him, but he absolutely knew she was the one, and nothing could shake his faith in her.
"Elena is having too many nightmares again," I said, looking after his sister as she made her way to the bathroom. "I don't like it."
"None of us do," Victor acknowledged. "She had been sleeping in the bed with me, and that helped some. She was with Lana when Lana and the others got into camp last night."
Storm was on the other side of Victor, scowling after his sister.
"Scared the hell out of us. You were gone most of the night with Reaper and Savage, so you didn't hear. It was that horrible sound that she makes when she's asleep, and you know if you touch her, you'll just be part of her nightmare. I thought knowing Sarbakov was dead would stop them, or slow them down, but they're getting worse."
Victor knew exactly what they were talking about. Elena's nightmares were becoming worse. All of them knew it, but no one knew what to do. He rubbed the bridge of his nose, although hitting something instead would have made him feel a whole hell of a lot better. Still, there was Blythe. He was counting on Blythe. She lived in a world apart from them, and she was smart. She knew things about that other world that they were closed off from.
"My woman will figure it out."
Ice and Storm exchanged a long look that annoyed Victor.
"What the hell is that supposed to mean?"
Ice tried to look innocent, but Storm shook his head as if Victor was to be pitied.
"I don't think this woman exists, Tsar. If she did, she'd have to be a fucking saint, and since she married you, that can't be."
"That can't be."
"Or," Ice chimed in, nudging his twin, "Tsar made her up so he could get himself off at night. He has such a problem with the skanky women hanging around the Swords Clubhouse all the time."
Storm nodded.
"That could be. He has a Madonna complex."
"A what?"
Ice demanded.
"You know, the mother of his child has to be a saint."
"That's not what a Madonna complex is, you moron," Victor snapped. "It would mean I couldn't maintain sexual arousal in a committed relationship. Believe me, I had no problem, and thinking about her gets me hard as a fucking rock, so shut the hell up."
Both men burst out laughing and sauntered toward the path leading down to the ocean. Victor glared after them.
"Troubles are?"
Absinthe asked as he pulled off his gloves. Victor couldn't help but stare at the tattoos on his fingers, the ones sleeving his arms, going up his neck and disappearing into his shirt. They all had tattoos, ones that told stories if you knew how to read them. Every single one of them wore the torpedo ink tat on their backs, and they wore it with pride. The cypress tree spread out with 17 branches, roots tangled at the bottom with piles of skulls buried among them, crows flying away from the tree or picking through the skulls at the roots. Each skull represented a kill. Reaper's tat was alarmingly full. The others were quickly catching up with this last assignment. He hoped to slow them all down, to find reasons not to do what they did. But Reaper was so right when he said they'd never be able to stop. He'd never be able to stop. What would Blythe think about their inability to stop what they did best? Could he get away with not telling her? Women, as a rule, didn't know club business. That was the way it was. They didn't sit in on the meetings, and they were expected to do what their old men told them to do. Blythe wasn't going to like that. She was all about women's rights and women being strong. He liked strong women, especially her. But he wanted her to trust him enough to follow his lead. He was a leader. He'd been put in that position at age 10, and he was still in that position. He couldn't be anything else. He glanced over at Reaper, who was still sitting on his bike, taking a careful look around. The man was right. Either she loved him for who he really was, or she didn't.
"Your woman knows how to deal with trauma,"
Absinthe prompted. His woman walked on water.
"She can do just about anything. She'll love Elena and Lana, and they need a little love.
They have us,
Absinthe reminded quietly.
We love them, and they still aren't better.
Victor raised his head and looked his brother in the eye.
Are you?
Because none of them were. Not a single one, especially him. Victor was as screwed up as the rest of them. He suffered the same nightmares and had all kinds of issues he didn't want to talk about, especially with someone as sweet and innocent as Blythe. He sighed and shoved his hand through his hair.
You're right, Absinthe. They aren't better.
Elena came out of the women's room, walking toward them with her long, confident strides, her glossy platinum hair flowing around her. She always wrapped her hair in some kind of intricate knot when she was riding, but took it down the moment she was off the bike. He knew that was a leftover from when one of the instructors had beat her senseless and shaved her head. She'd been six, and it had taken all of them to console her. But then, she'd never really gotten over it.
What is it?
Reaper asked. The man was creepy silent even in motorcycle boots. Victor heard everything, but he never heard Reaper or Savage. The two were a force to be reckoned with. He didn't know which was worse, Reaper, the older brother, or Savage, the younger. Most likely Reaper. Had any of Victor's birth brothers been in that place of horror, he would have lost his mind.
We're all pretty fucked up, aren't we, Reaper?
What if Blythe didn't take him back? That question had haunted him for too long now. He woke up in the middle of the night numerous times, sweat pouring off of him, his heart pounding at the possibility. He had never once considered she wouldn't want him, not in the first year or two. But then as time stretched out and he couldn't see or hear from her, that fear had begun to take hold.
Some of us more than others. You not so much. You were older than the rest of us and figured out a way to fight back. You kept us human when we all would have been animals.
Reaper gazed out at the shimmering water.
You gave us life, Czar. Stop beating yourself up. I've never seen you like this. She's either the one or she's not.
Victor pressed his thumb to the center of his palm and held it there. Prakensky's didn't make mistakes when it came to choosing their women. Blythe was the one. She was his wife, his partner, his only. He touched his chest, the lock tattooed over his heart. She had the key tattooed on her body.
She's the one.
He turned toward the ocean and strode away from Reaper. The man saw too much. Elena waited for him on the small, beaten-down trail leading to the beach.
Who did you leave with the bikes?
He ruffled her shiny head of hair. Her brothers had the same color, a throwback to some Nordic ancestor.
I didn't have to leave anyone. Savage is sitting there, scaring the hell out of people.
Elena laughed.
He does like to do that.
That wasn't true. Savage just didn't give a damn what people thought. He wanted them to leave him alone. Victor worried about him almost more than he did about Reaper. Savage was 1 year younger than Reaper. He'd been only three when he'd been brought to the school. He rarely showed feeling, even with Elena and Lana. Victor lowered his shoulder and hit Elena in the belly with it, lifting her and running toward the cold water. She screamed and pounded his back, laughing as she did so. Ice and Storm moved to intercept him, running to cut him off before he would throw their younger sister into the sea. He wouldn't, but he believed in living in every moment. That was a gift from Blythe. He wanted the others to learn laughter. It was so rare in them, and they needed it. Blythe had taught him to play. She'd been his mark. He'd studied her and become everything she needed, inserting himself into her life until she was lost in him. Except that he'd found himself lost in her. He'd delayed killing the stepfather in order to spend time with her. He found laughter, something he had never known, and he wanted to give that to his brothers and sisters. Ice came at him from the side at a dead run, leaning low to catch him around the waist. Storm caught his sister as if she were a sack of potatoes rather than a human being. Ice tackled Victor, taking him to the ground. They rolled in the sand like two little kids, yet there was no laughter, not even a glint of it on Ice's face. Victor's heart sank. Where was the feeling they all needed to remain human? He couldn't find it, and he'd pinned all his hopes on Blythe, not just to save him, but to save all of them. Before Ice could get up, Transporter was on him, a dive that took him several feet across the beach, landing hard. The two rolled several times and came to a halt at Elena's feet. She caught both by the arm.
Get up, you two clowns!
Transporter jumped to his feet.
You're afraid of clowns.
I'm not afraid of clowns, you dope, Elena protested.
But you are.
Transporter caught her around the neck in a headlock and rubbed the top of her head with his knuckles. Elena dug her fingers into his pressure points at his elbow and back of his knee. His knee collapsed and he staggered. She took him down by planting her shoulder in his belly. Mechanic caught her around the waist and lifted her off Transporter.
I can't have you beating up the younger brother, Elena.
Absinthe dove on top of Transporter the moment Elena was clear.
I've been waiting for this moment. You owe me 72 cents. I'm taking it out of your worthless hide.
All of them knew Transporter had lightning-fast reflexes. It was one thing for Elena to attack him. Anyone else was taking a chance. He rolled out from under Absinthe before their bodies touched. Somehow he managed to turn the tables on Absinthe. Ice and Storm instantly went to Absinthe's aid, racing to get into the fray, wrestling Transporter. Mechanic let out a roar and dove in to help his younger brother. Elena laughed, the sound like music, drawing Victor's attention. She looked beautiful with the sun shining down on her sleek hair. She was beautiful. She just didn't believe it. Victor sat in the sand, watching his brothers play. Ice and Storm wrestled with Transporter, Mechanic, and Absinthe, yet he didn't hear the sound of their laughter. There was an occasional grin, but no real laughter. How had Blythe managed to teach him? He couldn't remember the first time he'd smiled with her, and that bothered him. He rubbed his chin on his knees. He was putting too much on her. He knew that. He hadn't been able to stop the insidious spread of the need for violence through his brothers and sisters. How could he expect her to save them all, him included? Yet he did. She had to. If she didn't, if she couldn't, they would all eventually be lost. He was certain they knew it. They needed violence, craved it. If they went on too long without action, they got restless and moody. Some were worse than others, but they all had those symptoms, along with a million other various issues. They were one fucked up club, but what the hell? They were alive and on their way to their new home. Reaper sat at the highest point, not paying attention to the antics of Transporter, Mechanic, Absinthe, Ice, and Storm. His gaze moved restlessly around him, checking out the few others on the beach and watching their backs. Savage hadn't moved from the motorcycles. It wasn't long before a low whistle warned him. A car nudged its way slowly through the parking lot, California Department of Parks and Recreation on its side. The men kept up their wrestling, but all were very aware of the official vehicle coming to check them out. The low whistle had warned them. It didn't matter what they were doing. When the alert sounded, they all paid attention. It was ingrained in them. It was also a very bad thing to have Savage be closest to the vehicle. There was no doubt in Victor's mind that the Rangers had also called the sheriff for backup. He didn't kid himself about how they looked. They looked like exactly what they were. Killers. He sauntered over, intercepting the Ranger as he got out of his SUV. Reaper was on his feet, looking anything but casual. Savage was off the bike as well. They were a distance away, but they definitely were intimidating. Two tall men with roped muscles, scars, and covered in tattoos.
Afternoon, Victor greeted. You need to see our day passes?
He didn't pretend to smile. Frankly, he was sick of this shit.
always getting hassled just because of the way they looked. At the back of his mind, that red flag wouldn't stop waving. They would always be different. They were different. He was. Blythe was either going to take him as he was, or he was royally screwed. He'd been counting on her for the last 5 years. Every minute of every day she'd been with him. He closed his fingers tight around the center of his palm, holding her to him, holding that mark that had faded right through his skin to his very bones, branding him hers. The ranger nodded curtly and looked expectant. His gaze behind his glasses kept shifting back toward the main road. Clearly he was expecting company. He definitely called the sheriff for reinforcements. That rage, always held so deep in Victor's gut, began to bubble toward the surface. The need to feel his fists hitting something. The need, through physical violence, to get rid of the rage that was always present, stamped every bit as deep in his bones as his connection to Blythe, rose like a wave.
Baby?
Elena slipped her hand on his arm and smiled at the ranger, all charm, when he could feel the same anger simmering in her. She turned the full beauty of her smile on the ranger.
Is something wrong?
Her voice sang with innocence, the voice of an angel. She'd always had that. The ranger couldn't help but respond. Victor had never seen anyone resist Elena. The man smiled at her. She came up to the ranger's shoulder, all curves and wide blue eyes. He actually took off his glasses to get a better look.
Did we miss one of the bikes when we were paying?
That was directed at Victor, but she kept smiling at the ranger.
It's such a beautiful day. I love the ocean and the sand. You must love working here.
She made it sound as if she admired the man and thought his job was the absolute best in the world. That was another of Elena's gifts. She focused completely on the person, and they focused completely on her. Victor knew at that moment every single one of his brothers could surround the ranger and he wouldn't see anyone but Elena. She had been very useful as a child growing up in an environment where it was important to disappear right in plain sight. Victor pulled the passes out of his pocket and handed them to Elena. She didn't even glance at him, keeping her entire attention on the man already eating out of her hand.
Here they are. I hope everything's in order. I just couldn't resist stopping and soaking up the sun.
She stretched her arms toward the sky as if she was offering herself to the universe. Victor couldn't help but admire her. He shifted his gaze to take in the others. Ice and Storm were close. Elena was their baby sister, and they watched over her like two predatory hawks. They had seen child after child killed in that school of horrors, and they had determined it wouldn't happen to Elena, and it hadn't. They hadn't been alone in that fierce determination. The others had been just as watchful over her and one another. Transporter and mechanic flanked the ranger, two brooding men with death in their eyes and deceptive smiles on their faces. Absinthe was to their right, and Reaper was at their left. Savage remained by the bikes, but he was the one Victor worried most about. It was impossible to predict his actions. Reaper and Savage had lost two sisters in that dungeon of horrors, and they watched over Elena and Lana to make certain they didn't lose them. If for any reason the ranger threatened Elena, he would be dead, and they would be gone before his body hit the asphalt. And it would be Victor who would do the killing. He was close enough, although Elena was crowding him. He'd have to reprimand her later. She knew better, but she was doing it deliberately.
Everything looks in order. Paula must have counted the bikes wrong as they came through, ma'am, the ranger said. You staying long?
Elena shook her head regretfully.
We're heading up the coast.
The sheriff's car made its way slowly up the drive to the parking lot. He parked his vehicle at an angle, not in a space, partially cutting off the bikes. Victor watched as the driver got out of the car and walked toward them. There was no show of strength, no blustering. This was a man with confidence in his abilities.
He looked of Cajun descent, roped arms, a powerful, deep chest, shrewd, cool eyes that looked a little like black obsidian. He had faint scars on his face that only made him look more rugged. It was impossible to read his expression, but his gaze took all of them in, their positions and the fact that the ranger was surrounded and didn't even know it. Victor recognized trauma when he saw it, not just trauma. This was a very dangerous man. He also recognized Jackson DuVaux. DuVaux didn't make a show of looking at Savage, but he certainly clocked him and noted him as potential trouble. Same with Reaper. Elena's voice wasn't going to enthrall this man. Nothing was. DuVaux's gaze touched on each man and then came to rest on him. Further evidence he was a man to be careful of. He recognized Victor as the leader. They weren't wearing colors. There were no identifying markers. But in 2 seconds, DuVaux had read all he needed to know.
Bronson, Jackson greeted the ranger. Everything all right here?
Why wouldn't it be?
Victor challenged. He knew it was a dick move, but they'd been having a good day. A fucking great day. This was the man costing him 5 years of his life, probably his marriage and worse, and his birth brothers, possibly their homes. Now his good day, it was enough. Jackson's eyes rested on him, flat, cold, eyes like Reaper's. Maybe not as intense or as gone, but definitely close to it.
Just checking, sir.
Their passes are in order, Jackson, Bronson said hastily. You know Paula, she's dramatic. Sorry to call you out for nothing.
Victor wanted to smile when the man partially shielded Elena from the newcomer. Clearly, he was a little uneasy in the presence of the deputy. Jackson noticed everything, even the way the ranger protected Elena. His expression didn't change.
Nice bikes. Where are you heading?
Some devil in Victor wouldn't let sleeping dogs lie.
Heard about some prime real estate just north of Sea Haven in Casper. We decided to take a look at it. Want to set up a couple of businesses and looking for the right place to do it.
He kept his tone mild, no challenge, but he wanted it clear that he wasn't going to be pushed around.
Nice area. There's a big part of the Casper area for sale right now, including the roadhouse, inn, and quite a few homes. Most of the residences overlooking the ocean are occupied or vacation homes, but there's a good deal of property for sale in that area.
Informative. Non-judgmental, no hint of wanting them to move on. Still, the man was looking at him, studying him, seeing too much, seeing what Victor needed him to see even if it was too early. He knew the exact moment when recognition hit. It was his eyes. Victor had the eyes of a Prokhensky. He was older, harder, scarred and tattooed, but there was no mistaking his eyes. His 6 birth brothers resided in Sea Haven with their women. DuVaux knew Ilya, the youngest Prokhensky, and there was no doubt that he'd soon be visiting the others.
Nice to know. Thanks for the information.
Victor kept it short. There was no point in further engagement. He'd seen all he needed to. The short encounter backed up the information he had on the target. This was the man Evan Shackler Gratzos wanted dead more than any other. He wanted it so badly, he was willing to come out of hiding in order to kill him personally. Victor had studied DuVaux. He was recently married to L. Drake and just back from his honeymoon. The man was quiet but well-liked. He had been in the Army Rangers, did a brief stint with the CIA, and had at one time been captured and held in the Congo for several weeks, where it was reputed he'd been tortured. Seeing him in person, Victor knew those speculations were true. DuVaux inclined his head and tapped Bronson on the arm.
We've both got things to do. We'd better get to them and leave these folks to their day.
A not-so-subtle hint to take off. He wasn't leaving Bronson behind, although he gave no indication he thought Victor or the others were threats. He had seen them surrounding the ranger, wolves circling the lamb. Victor forced himself to step back, taking Elena with him. Bronson followed, reluctant to give her up.
Casper is right up the road from where I live. You like the area.
Deliberately, Victor put his arm around Elena and pulled her to him possessively.
If she does, she'll like it with me,
he said, staring the man down. Bronson flushed and let Jackson pull him away. Elena smiled demurely and waved her fingers.
See you later.
She even injected a bit of a hopeful note in her voice. That was Elena, wanting the same thing he did, a little violence to take away the fire burning inside. They didn't call her Torch for nothing. She ignited fires both physically as well as emotionally. She could get men to fight by batting her lashes.
I know what you're doing,
Victor said, just letting her know. He kept his eyes on the deputy. The man was a definite threat. He hadn't even put his hand near a weapon, but Victor had the feeling it wouldn't have mattered. Elena shrugged.
Why do you think I came over here? I kept that poor ranger from getting a beating, and us from having to fight our way out of here.
That might have been the truth. Victor had wanted to smash his baby face when the man made his power play, and Paula, the female ranger, he might have to pay her a visit in the middle of the night and mess with her head just for payback. He hated that they couldn't ride for a single day without getting hassled.
Let's get out of here,
he said. Elena gave him one emotion-laden look.
After you say thank you.
Thank you, Elena. I appreciate the fact that you kept me from doing something stupid.
She inclined her head regally.
You're very welcome. Glad to help. And just for your information, that deputy was good-looking. Did you notice he didn't really look at me? He's the real deal. Hardcore.
Victor nodded.
Yes, he is. He wouldn't have been easy to kill. He would have taken several of us with him.
I had him in my sights, Reaper said from behind him. Victor felt a chill creep up his spine to his neck. Reaper could do that to him. He never hurt him. Not even here where there was sand and rock and the man was wearing motorcycle boots.
He knew it too, Savage added. He was aware of both of us, and he walked right in the middle of that trap to get his friend out.
I didn't have the feeling they were all that good of friends,
I said.
More like acquaintances. But Elena is right. He didn't even look her way.
That, brothers, was Jackson DeVoe.
Victor dropped the bomb. Reaper and Savage kept looking at him. Neither blinked. Elena gasped. Ice and Storm exchanged a long look with each other, as did Mechanic and Transporter. Absinthe simply shrugged. They knew they were between a rock and a hard place when they'd agreed to take the job. DeVoe was the bait, plain and simple. The biggest problem, as Victor saw it, was he actually respected the man. He knew Jackson had grown up in the world of bikers. How he'd gotten into law enforcement was anyone's guess. But at one time, his father had been in Victor's exact position, an enforcer for the same chapter of the Swords. In another world, Victor might have liked Jackson, maybe even been friends. But that world was far away, and this one was his reality. Victor wanted a home, a wife, and a family. He wanted the same for his birth brothers and for his brothers and sisters in Torpedo Inc. They'd come up with the name when they were kids, teens, because in Russian, torpedo was assassin, hitman, and they thought it was funny to use the term in reference to themselves. By that time, Sorbakov was already sending them out on hits. Originally, Inc., I-N-C, was used, but because Inc., I-N-K, was so good at tattoos, they thought it would be a great idea to use Inc., I-N-K, instead of the other, so if they ever had a tattoo shop, they could call it Torpedo Inc. Over the years, after they'd learned to ride, they formed their own club with their own colors. They kept the names they'd called one another as teens and used Torpedo Inc. for the name of their club.
We've got to do it, Victor said.
If we can keep the man alive, we will. The main objective is to kill Evan. We can't lose sight of that. We cut off that head, and Code gets to the sword's real books. We've destroyed the Empire. That's our goal, and we stay on course no matter what.
The others nodded, and with his arm around Elena, Victor walked back to the bikes. Chapter 4 Victor didn't really acknowledge fear. When you lived and breathed it every minute of your existence as a child, you learned to accept fate. What you couldn't control, you just had to accept. He knew that, so why was his heart pounding out of control? Why couldn't he keep his fingers relaxed instead of gripping the bike so hard he thought he'd leave indentations? He was going to see his wife for the first time in 5 years. They were minutes outside of Sea Haven, and the first thing he intended to do was break off from the others. He would leave them at one of the bars, and he'd go find her house. The taste of her had never faded, not in the least. The moment he thought of her, she was there against his skin. It wasn't fair to put so much on her, but over the last 5 years, seeing the things he'd seen, doing the things he'd had to do, he had slowly been losing himself. He couldn't afford to do that. He had to stay strong for the others. He was the one that kept them all together. Without him, he knew both Reaper and Savage would be lost, and probably several, if not all, of the others. He was bringing all of them home to Blythe, certain that she could work her magic on them the way she did him. She had to. The burden was becoming too much. Not the burden of his brothers and sisters, but the burden of being Victor Prokhensky. Like the others, he had left over childhood trauma issues, and they were catching up with him. Being in the Swords Club and carrying out the insanity of his chapter president's orders day in and day out, watching the vile way the men treated women, had only brought his past roaring back, threatening to consume him. He had already been hardened into something not fit for society, believing himself lost until he met her. Blythe, his wife. Her laughter and soft skin had saved him at a time when he was certain nothing could. He would have that back. A few more minutes, that was all. They turned off the highway, taking the exit to Sea Haven. It was a very small town overlooking the sea, unique in its historical beauty. They took the main road that led straight into downtown, the ocean across the street from the small shops, beckoning tourists. The bar where he was hoping to leave the others was located on the main street between two shops. They nudged the bikes up to the curb right in front. Victor looked around him, inhaling the sea air. A breeze came off the ocean, but it felt good on his skin. The sound of laughter caught his attention. He knew that laugh. That musical sound. Alert, he swung his leg over his bike and turned toward the sound. A tall man with a short beard stood just outside a shop, leaning one hand against the side of the building, positioned just to the right of a blonde woman's head. Blythe. She looked up at the man, laughing softly. His breath caught in his throat. She was more beautiful than he remembered. The sound of her voice struck him like an arrow piercing his chest. For one terrible moment, his vision clouded until the man was nothing but a target, and a dozen ways to kill him flashed through Victor's mind. Damn her to hell for betraying him. He was moving before he could think. He didn't want to think. His mind refused to do anything but insist he get the enemy away from his woman. He could deal with her treachery later. He would deal with her later. Ground-eating strides had him on the sidewalk and practically on top of them before his wife, realized she was caught. The smile faded from her curved lips. He loved her lips, worshipped them. He remembered them under his, soft and so inviting. He remembered them wrapped around his cock, sexy as hell. He was definitely killing the fucker if she'd sucked his cock. He was going to kill him anyway,
but that would seal his fate. Blythe put a hand on the man's chest just as he got to them. The male turned toward him, but it was already too late. Victor had Blythe's arm and yanked her hard to him.
"Get the hell away from my wife," he snapped.
The man paled.
"Your wife?"
"Yeah, my fucking wife. You come near her again and you're a dead man."
That was stupid. When the man turned up dead, he'd be the first one they looked at. He'd have to make certain no one ever found the body.
"Victor."
"Yeah, Victor. Nice that you remember who you're married to."
He started to walk back toward the bikes, taking her with him. He wanted to shake the life out of her, and at the same time, he wanted to kiss her senseless, remind her just who she belonged to. The scent of her filled his lungs, a scent he remembered all too well. Sometimes, while she slept, he just inhaled her, putting his head beside hers on the pillow so he could breathe her in. She planted her feet stubbornly, as if she could pit her strength against his.
"Let go of me," she hissed. "I mean it. Let go right now."
He didn't. Instead, his fingers tightened until they were a shackle around her upper arm.
"Not happening, babe. Did you fuck him?"
Her mouth opened and closed twice. There was a kind of horror in her eyes, as if she looked at a monster, or she was shocked that she got caught.
"After 5 years of nothing, that's the first thing out of your mouth?"
She kept her voice low.
"You must have forgotten. I go for the important things and keep the bullshit to a minimum."
She struggled more, and he tightened his grip warningly.
"I'm giving you bullshit?"
Her eyes narrowed, and the dark chocolate washed through him like a heat wave. His blood turned to molten lava. He'd forgotten that reaction to her little flares of temper. Whenever she got annoyed with him and gave him that look, his cock reacted, going hard with urgent demand. It took control not to drop his hand and feel that honest reaction, something that didn't happen as a rule, another thing beat out of him in his childhood. He did drag her close, tight against him, her hips against his, so she could feel that hard length imprinted on her soft skin.
"Yeah, you're giving me bullshit." "I'm not the one who murdered my stepfather and then disappeared without a word, a single word. Just left the dead body and my grieving drunk of a mother."
He noticed she didn't say she'd been grieving. No matter how much her stepfather had tried to con her, she had never liked him.
"I left you a long, detailed letter. Get on the back of my bike. I'm not discussing this with you in the street, especially after waiting for 5 fucking years, and I find my wife with another man."
She put both hands against his chest and tried to shove him.
"Stop saying I'm your wife. I'm not, and unless you want every sheriff in 100-mile range running here fast, let go right now." "You are my wife. Legally and in every other way, so that gives me the right to know whether or not you're fucking that coward."
She glanced back at the man who had slunk away. He had his cell phone out, so they were going to get a visit by the cops soon.
"No, not that you deserve an answer, and stop saying fuck. I hate that, and you know it."
She had always hated that word. He was going to have to clean up his language, and he'd catch hell from the others letting a woman dictate to him. But the one thing about Blythe he couldn't imagine changed was the fact that she didn't lie. He could see it in her eyes. Not only was she telling the truth, she hadn't slept with the coward. Her body wanted Victor and was glad to see him, whether her brain and heart did or not. That was something.
"Clearly you're a Prekensky, and from what I understand, that means you were working for your government. When we found out who my stepfather was, a notorious pedophile, I realized rather recently that you had been assigned to kill him. You did your job and used me to do it. I get that, so I'm not calling the cops and turning you in for murder. But stop saying I'm your wife, because I'm not, and you have no right to act all self-righteous."
"You are my wife. In case you don't remember, we got married. In a church. I remember. Too bad you so easily can forget.
He couldn't help the snarl in his voice. She could piss him off like no one else. He liked being her husband. He wanted her to like it as well, but mostly he wanted her to admit they were married. A low whistle warned him the sheriff must have showed up. He glanced over his shoulder. Reaper and Savage flanked him. The others sat on their bikes, watching.
Get on that bike, Blythe.
He heard a car door shut. Two men were striding toward them. He recognized Jackson DeVoe immediately and guessed the man with him was Jonas Harrington, the local sheriff. He'd heard of his reputation.
They don't stand a chance against my brothers and me, so don't be stupid and make a scene.
She stiffened at his not-so-veiled threat.
They're law enforcement, she whispered. Victor, don't be crazy.
You know what will happen if you don't just get on the bike. I'm not leaving you again.
Blythe glanced behind her at the two men walking up the sidewalk toward them.
Fine.
She bit the word out between clenched teeth, turned away from him, and stomped toward the bikes parked in front of the bar. Victor took the time to admire the sway of her ass. He'd always liked the way his woman walked. He didn't look at the sheriff, but followed behind Blythe, ready to catch her if she tried changing her mind. Reaper and Savage had his back. Blythe halted so abruptly he nearly ran her down. He caught her shoulders, his body crowding hers, in order to force her forward, but she only took two small steps and then stopped again.
Just which bike is yours?
She demanded, staring straight ahead. He followed her gaze to his bike. Elena sat on the back, looking relaxed, as if she belonged there. There was no explaining Elena there on the street with the cops coming right up on them and a small crowd watching the drama.
You bastard!
Blythe's voice was low, a whisper of sound, but he caught the note of hurt.
Nothing coming out of your mouth is the truth. You wouldn't know it if it hit you in the face. I'll have my lawyer check into the marriage. If it was legal, you'll be hearing from him. I won't stay married to you.
She spun away from him, her back ramrod stiff. Victor cursed and caught her arm.
There's not going to be a divorce.
Is there a problem here, Blythe? It was the taller of the two men who spoke, Jonas Harrington. He and Jackson had spread out a little, giving themselves room if they needed it. Reaper had positioned himself on the side nearest Jackson, perceiving him as the biggest of the two threats. Savage flanked Harrington. The other members of Torpedo Inc. slowly stood up, ready to move on his signal.
No, Jonas, Blythe said brightly. We were just talking, but we're finished now.
She sent Victor a glare.
Completely finished.
DeVoe didn't appear to be fazed by being surrounded by the bikers. He walked up to Victor and held out his hand.
Nice to see you again. I had no idea you knew Blythe.
It was a stab in the dark. He and Blythe had been speaking low to each other. All DeVoe had to go on was the way they looked together.
She's my wife,
he said, and signaled to the others to get on their bikes. They were leaving. He wasn't going to risk her or Elena getting hurt. Blythe stepped closer to DeVoe, and that pissed him off. She didn't need the man's protection, not from him. Then again, maybe she did. If he had his way, he'd be taking her somewhere private, and they'd be getting down to business fast.
Is that true, Blythe?
Jonas asked. Victor went still. It was one thing to have his woman call him out, but another man? Hell no. He'd been spoiling for a fight, and the thought of hitting someone really hard was more than tempting.
You calling me a liar?
He spoke low, but his words carried, and there was no mistaking the menace in them. Blythe turned immediately and put a hand on his arm, stepping squarely between him and the sheriff.
Of course he's not calling you a liar, Victor. He's just shocked because he's known me practically since birth, and I'm not wearing a ring.
She held up her hand with its naked finger.
See?
He caught her wrist.
Where the hell is your ring?
Her eyes flashed that startling brown again, a pure flame of dark chocolate. His body, as perverse as it was, reacted a second time, his cock full and aching, no half measures at all. She put both hands on his shoulders and leaned into him, her mouth against his ear.
"Your girlfriend is wearing it. I told her she could have it."
Her lips brushed his earlobe, soft and inviting, sending heat spiraling through him. She went to pull away, but he caught the ponytail, all that thick, silky hair she had tied up at the back of her head. Using her hair, he tilted her head and brought his mouth down on hers. She gasped, and his tongue swept inside. Her taste. He remembered that taste. Raw honey. Lust rose sharp and terrible, a need that nearly overwhelmed him. He kissed her like he'd wanted to over the last 5 years. All those lonely days and nights of hell, gone, just like that, swept away by her magic. She'd always been able to do that, take him somewhere he'd never been or even imagined. It didn't matter that he was angry with her, or she was angry with him. The moment his mouth was on hers, his past was gone, as if it had never been. She wiped it all out with her taste and the way her mouth moved under his, the stroke of her tongue, the heat and fire. DeVoe cleared his throat. Her fingers curled into fists in his shirt, and she pulled away. He let her, only because if he didn't, there was going to be an altogether different type of scene right there in the street, and Blythe was no exhibitionist. He wouldn't care. The woman was his, and as far as he was concerned, the entire world needed to know it. She pressed trembling fingers to her lips, her gaze avoiding his. She'd kissed him back, and there was no denying that fact. She hadn't been passive at all. But then, she never had been. Blythe was a woman who knew what she wanted, and she matched him fire for fire. She ducked around him to put Jackson between them.
"Your wedding ring, Blythe. Put it on."
For some reason, he couldn't let that go. It hurt not to see it on her finger. She raised her chin.
"I lost it."
She was lying to him, totally lying.
"Put it on,"
he repeated, and stalked to his bike.
"Ride with Absinthe,"
he snapped to Elena. She nodded and sauntered over to Absinthe's bike, swinging one slim leg over to fit herself easily behind Absinthe's back. Blythe made a sound that had him spinning around. Was she weeping? He couldn't see. She was walking away, her back to him. She was so damn beautiful he wanted to rush after her, throw her over his shoulder and carry her off. They could work out whatever problems they had if they were all alone. In bed. Anywhere alone. Instead of doing what every cell in his body demanded, he threw his leg over his bike and started the engine. All the while, his gaze was on his wife. She didn't turn around, didn't look back. She thought it was over. Little did she know, he was back to stay, and he was going to be in her life permanently. Blythe heard the roar as all 8 motorcycles started up. She desperately wanted to look at him one more time. Victor. She thought she'd never see him again. Never. She'd been so in love with him. She'd felt as if she'd come to life, really started living when she first met him. She touched her lips, still tingling from his kiss. Her entire body was on fire. From the moment she'd met him, he'd been able to do that when no one else ever had. Tears burned behind her eyes, but she refused to cry, not in front of everyone. Growing up, she'd always been reserved, very private, and she was even more so as an adult. Her father had died of cancer when she was barely 5. Her mother had become a secret binge drinker. Blythe had learned